Today's daf from the Masechet Kedushin, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Gimel. And we're holding at the bottom of Ayin Beis, Amud Beis. So we've been talking about the Inyonim of Yuchasim, and actually before we got into the details of the various places and the assumptions and so on, we already raised the question of the relationship between a ger and a mamzeret, or vice versa. A mamzer and a giyoret. So today we want to go into those details. Tana Rabbana. Ger nosei mamzeret, divrei Rabbi Yosi. So according to Rabbi Yosi, even though he's talking only about the male ger and the female mamzeret, we're going to see that it doesn't necessarily refer bedafka to that case, because the issue, as we're going to see, is the question of lo yavo mamzer bekal Hashem, is that inclusive of gerim in Kahal Hashem, or is Kahal Hashem Kahal gerim lo ikre Kahal, according to Rabbi Yosi? Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Eimer ger lo yisa mamzeret, and he holds that absolutely Kahal gerim is considered to be Kahal, and because of that, it's also true that echad ger v'echad eved meshuchrar v'chalal mutarim. So that would mean that anyone where we have this problem in terms of kahal would be mutter to marry, even though there may be isurim in the male to the female. There are no isurim when it comes to the males. I meant the female to the males in terms of the male kohen, but in the other way around, to marry a kohenes, there are no isurim on the kohenes, as we're going to see. All of the isurim in the Torah, in which the Torah asks a kohen to marry a chalala or a gioret, and all of the issues that we raised in the sveikas or in a shivcha, none of those apply the other way around. So even an eved is allowed to marry a kohenet. So let's go back and take each one of these statements in the brisa. We started with Rabbi Yosi, and Rabbi Yosi says that kahal gerim is not considered to be kahal. Now, where does he get that from, which would allow any type of relationship between a kahal gerim and a mamzer or a mamzeret? Says Rabbi Yosi, look, it's fascinating that we have five separate times in the Torah in which all of these things could have been included together. And five separate times, this doesn't include the one extra time, which has to do not with yichusim, but with problems of genitals. That's a different issue, but pitzuadaka and so on. But there's five times where we have a din of yichus, and it, instead of including them together, the Torah lists each one of them as a separate bekal Hashem. So we have the lo yavo mamzer bekal Hashem, and then it adds gam dor asiri lo yavo lo bekal Hashem, lo yavo amoni umoavi bekal Hashem, and then it repeats there too, gam dor asiri lo yavo lahem, again bekal Hashem. And then we have the Dor Shlishi Lagabe Mitzvah Domi Dor Shlishi Yavolem Bekahal Hashem. So why do we need all of these separate mentions each time? Instead of utilizing a pronoun, we talk again about the Kahal Hashem. Therefore, Tainis Rabbi Yosi, that the repetition is there to teach us the nature of the meaning of the Kahal Hashem. So we have various levels of Kahal. So one of them is to tell me the Kahal Hashem of the maximal Yichus, which is Kayani. One of them is to tell me Levim. One of them is to tell me that Mamzerim are also Stam for Yisraelim. One of them is to tell me that it's Mutter for a Mamzer to marry a Shtuki, because of the fact, as we're going to see later, that since the Torah mentions again Kahal Hashem, it's telling me that we need to define this as Kahal Hashem. We need to know that it's a Kahal Hashem. And where there is elements that are not Kahal Hashem, so then these Isurim do not apply. Therefore, if we're talking about a Shtuki, which we cannot define it as a Kahal Hashem, we have no idea what the Shtuki is, that would be Matir the Mamzer, because that's not called a Kahal Hashem. One is the other way around. V'chad l'mishri Shtuki Yisrael, because like this, you would have thought, now wait a second. A shtuki means that we have no idea who his father was. So Mamela, he becomes a Suffolk mamzer by definition. And yet, as we said before, it is not Aser Midiraisa And that's because we understand that the mamzer that the Torah is referring to is only a mamzer vadai, not a mamzer safek. So where do we get that from? So it's the fact that we mention now, even a fifth time, we mention the word kahal. And just like kahal is a definition of a specific state that's been defined as a kahal, so the same thing is true that the mamzer is a specific state that's defined as mamzer. Masha Einkein, someone who we don't know is a mamzer, we don't treat that as just a regular suffix deraisa, because the Torah only answered a mamzer in the context of kahal vadai, and therefore the mamzer also means the mamzer vadai. So it's true that we did talk about before that shtuki is not included in the heter to marry a Yisrael, but that is not really true in the deraisa at all, as we've just said. Because what's the problem of the shtuki? That he might be a mamzer, but that's only suffix. So we're going to see later on that that is a takana d'rabbanan in order to maintain a high wire for being included in the dinim of yuchas. So that's Reb Yosi. Now Reb Yehuda says, no, that's not true. Because Lamaisa, you used two of these words, Kahal Hashem, one to include Kohanim and one to include Levim. Now, Kohanim and Levim are not two separate kahals. They're both the same shevet. And the point is that some of them have the classification of Kohen and some the classification of Levi. But you can't call that two separate psukim of Kahal Hashem. So therefore, Tainis Rebuta, Kohanim and Levim are there to tell me one time of the Kahal is there to tell me the Kohanim and Levim, which means that I have an extra posik of Kahal Hashem to broaden the understanding of the nature of the Kahal Hashem to include the Kahal Gerim as well. That's one approach to Reb Yehuda. V'ibay Zema, another reason that Reb Yehuda would argue on Reb Yosi is because, let's say, should be made that we have two separate Kahal Hashems because of the two separate darkas of Yichus of Kohen and Levi. Even so, he wouldn't have changed his mind. Because the Mamzer, Bishtuki, Ubishtuki B'Yisrael, both of those actually are derived from one of these Kahals. Because, look, when it says Lo Yavo Mamzer, B'Kahal Hashem, so we learn from there that this defines the nature of the Mamzer, that it has to be the Mamzer Vadai. The Mamzer Sofik, Kenyafo. And the same Bikal Hashem is saying the interrelationship of the Kahal to the Mamzer. Bikahal Vadai, Hudelo Yavo. But Bikahal Safek, Kenyafo. So what that means is that a Mamzer can marry a Shtuki. And we learn both of these, the Dinim of Mamzeris and the Dinim of Shtuki, because a Sof called Sof, the idea of a Shtuki, is only a Sofik Mamzer. That's the whole point. And you know what? I can even tell you a more direct raya to Reb Yehuda brings to his shita. Maybe it doesn't even involve the way in which he understands the limudim of Kahal Hashem and their relationship to Mamzer. Maybe Reb Yehuda even agrees to this, that haninami trei kahalei ninu, that maybe we do need two separate kahals to teach me the dinim of Shtuki and Mamzer. And really, the reason that Reb Yehuda says Kahal Gerim is called Kahal is not because he's got an extra pasuk. The first two approaches utilize an extra pasuk. Either Kohen and Levi, according to Reb Yehuda, as opposed to Reb Yosi, are learned from one Kahal Hashem, or Shtuki and Mamzer are learned from one Kahal Hashem. Okay, but the third approach that we're taking now, no. This has nothing to do with having an extra Kahal Hashem alibi de Reb Yehuda to include Kahal Gerim. It actually comes from a pasuk, and that is that the Torah defines the Kahal openly, and it says that the dinim of Nisachim are applied across the board, whoever is bringing a korban. And look what it says. HaKahal Chuka Achat Lachem V'Lager Hagar. So what is that telling you? It's saying openly that the kahal that is mitzvah in the dinim of Nesachim is meant to include, with no distinctions, you, lachem, v'lager, hagar. You can't get more clear than that, says Reb Yehuda. So how can you argue on that? The Torah is saying, stop with all of these distinctions. There is no difference whatsoever between Kahal Gerim and the rest of Kahal Hashem. Wow, that is one heck of a riot. Says the Gemara, so whoa, what does Rabbi Yossi do with that? So for Rabbi Yossi, how can he taina against an open pasuk that he is going to make a distinction between the Kahal Hashem because of his being listed so many times and Kahal Gerim? Says the Gemara, so what's Rabbi Yossi going to do with this? And he says that a mamzer is mutter in a giyore. He's saying, if the Torah really wanted to teach you that Kahal includes lachem lager hager, then it would say, chuka achat lakahal lachem lager hager. Why does it say hakahal, and then chuka achat, and then go back to say lachem lager hager? So therefore, it's actually being mafsik between the word kahal and the word lager hager. And then what was the end of the brayser? We didn't explain how we know that. Echad ger, echad eved meshuchrar, ve'echad cholol. All of these are allowed to marry a kohenes, which is a riot to what Rav says. Rav says, generally speaking, we have one klal. Kisheirais, meaning women who are kohanot, who have no psul in them whatsoever, have no problem in marrying any of the psulim for kuhuna. Obviously, they're not allowed to marry a mamzer, but that's not a din of psulei kuhuna. That's a din that we know that the Torah never distinguishes the halacha of a woman from the halacha of a man. But when it comes to the din of the kuhunim, it's over there. It's the sons of Aaron that are considered to be kohanim, the kohanot, even though they eat petruma and so on. But none of the isurim of marriage apply to the banot. In which case, as a gavi rule, lo huzaru kesherot lihinase lipsulim. So then that means that the kohanot who have no psul, are nonetheless, they don't have a problem in marrying any of the above, even if we're talking about an eved, there's no problem. There's certainly a halal, it's no problem. So once, boy, did Rabbi Zira make a big mistake. He went to Mechuza. Now, Mechuza basically was a town that was absolutely, I mean, most of the people, half of the people were gerim. And that was the norm in Mechuza. So he gets up, and boy, did he make a mistake. He gets up, and he says in a drasha, a ger is mutter in a mamzeret. Now everybody, this was during Sukkot, so everybody took their esrog and threw it at him. Now, that's a lot worse than having rotten tomatoes, because those esrogs are hard. So the whole tzibur was throwing esrogim at him. And, oh my gosh, the Rava, when he heard about it, said, oh my goodness. I mean, who in his right mind would do something like that? You know, to be able to give over that halacha in Mechuzah, you need a very intelligent person, like me. So, mi'ika de darish milsa ki hai beduchta de shvicha giyuri, that's the way that you say over this halacha, in which they're going to laugh you out of town if they don't kill you first? So Rava, he figured out a great way to teach this halacha in Mechuzah. So he goes and he gives a shir, and he says, a ger can marry a kohenes. Oh, everybody starts clapping. Exactly. We are definitely up there, right up there with the best of them, and we can take even a bas kohen. And everybody said, amazing, you're wonderful. And then they came out and they present him with a beautiful new beged made out of silk, and you know, now Rav is on the top. Oh my gosh, everybody wants him for the next lecture. Rav is about to speak. So then he says, okay, now that you're so happy, I want to tell you, a ger is allowed to marry a mamzeres. So they start booing him. Now you lost everything. Afsidita lekamaita. Now you messed up the first thing you said. He said to them, what are you talking about? I didn't mess up anything. I gave you the best of both worlds. You can marry a kohenes. And if you feel like marrying a mamzeret, go right ahead. So you're calling me making problems? On the contrary, the tavelechu abdilechu, I gave you the best of both worlds. Iboy mi hachanasiv, iboy mi hachanasiv. You could marry either up or down, whatever you want. Halacha is that a ger is mutter b'kohenet and mutter b'mamzeret, exactly as Rava said. Mutter b'kohenet because of the gavi klal that we just had at lo huzaruk sheirot v'hilas selip sulin, but also mutter b'mamzeret because we paskin like Rabbi Yossi that kahal gerim is not considered to be kahal. Right. Now, we'll talk about the halachas in this later, but let's continue now the next piece in the Mishnah. So we said, what is considered to be a shtuki? So Elohim shtuki, ko shemakir et aviv, et imo, veino makir et aviv. That's why it's called shtuki, because whenever he tries to call somebody daddy, his mother shuts him up. So sh is shtuki. Omar Rava, now you need to understand, this issue in the Mishnah is only a drabona, and that we said that a shtuki doesn't marry a Yisraeli. Why not? Dvar Torah shtuki kosher. Obviously, midiraisa, there's no problem. My timer, wasn't there a chance that maybe his father was someone that was usher to his mother and that he's a mamzer? So why isn't he usher? Because rov ksheri metzla, umiut psuli metzla. Look, basically, what we're talking about over here, we're going to see later on that we're not talking about a woman who was married. Because if a woman who was married had a child like that, so then she never would have shut him up when he calls his supposed daddy, daddy. That's exactly what she wants. Yes, child, this is daddy. Ha ha ha. Little does he know. But Lamaisa, she would never shut him up. So if she's shutting him up, it means that she's not married and she didn't have anybody to make it clear that this was the father. And therefore, what we're talking about in most cases, now obviously the Gemara is going to say, I mean, look, what about a guy who's away for a year on a business trip, or somebody's been in jail for a year? I mean, how's she going to attribute the pregnancy to the father? Fine, okay, but that's obviously a myriad of cases. So therefore, what we're talking about over here is the only one that would have created Mamzerut is if the father was an Ereva. I mean, how many people are in Ereva? You know, 99.9% of the world to an unmarried woman is not a problem. So since Rov Ksheri Metzla, Umiutsuli Metzla, so Midiraisa, there should be absolutely no problem. Now, the question is that in the normal case where Yasli Inu Lagaba, so one of this pool of people who might be the father. So if that person came to her and impregnated her in her house, so then we have a rule called a parish, miruba parish. So since the rove of people in the world are all kosher for her, we would have no problem at all with any chashash of mamzeres on this shtuki. What about the other way around? Okay, so now, what are you going to tell me the problem is? Why am I claiming that it's mutter d'oraisa, says Rava? Because what are you going to claim the problem is? The problem is that maybe she went to somebody's house and got pregnant. Now, if she did, then that individual is no longer called kol t'parish miruba k'parish. That is called kavua. And in another Gavi rule, kol kavua k'mechza al-mechza dami. We always view something that is in its own place as not being parish min harov, but rather it's as if everything is chetzi chetzi. Okay, so we've got a 50-50 chance, you're going to say, right? Okay, even if that were true, it would be still a suffix mamzer, and the shtuki would be included, therefore, in lo yavo mamzer b'kahal Hashem. And we just learned out that mamzer b'kahal Hashem refers only to mamzer vadai. That's the one who is lo yavo b'kahal Hashem. Masha inkin, a mamzer suffix, would be able to be bo b'kahal Hashem. So therefore, there's no way to justify what our Mishnah says on the basis of a d'oraisa. That's for sure. Okay, so if that's the case, why does the Mishnah in fact answer it? So ma tam amru shtuki pasul. That is, says Rava. Now we're not going to stick with this. In the end, we're going to see that it's to actually make a high wire definition in order to maintain the chashivas of Yochasim. But Rava suggests that actually the din that a shtuki should not marry into Yisraeli is Gzeira D'Rabban. What's the Gzeira D'Rabban? That since we have no idea who the father was, if he is going to marry someone, then how does he know that that someone is not from the same father? And that would mean he's marrying his sister. Now, he obviously knows it's not from the same mother, but a sister from the same father is considered to be one of the Arayas, correct? Okay, so then the Rabbanu were gozer, you have to worry, maybe he would marry that. Hold on a second. So then if that's true, so then a Shtuki should not even be allowed to marry a Shtuki. Not them. Mishnah is not allowed to marry a Bas Yisrael. But the fact is, it's the same Gezeira, isn't it? A Shtuki should not marry a Shtukit because Shema Yisa Achoto Mi Aviv. So we have the same question. Why in the world would it only have to do with married people? Ah, come on. I mean, like, what are we talking about? We've got Mr. Stud who's getting everybody in town pregnant? That's not reasonable. Koki Ani Mizanu Vazlu. So what do you mean? This guy got into trouble. He got a woman pregnant, right? And now we've got this shtuki. So now he didn't learn his lesson. He's going to go around making everybody else pregnant. This is not reasonable. What are the chances that there's actually the same guy impregnated this woman, and that's the woman whose daughter he's marrying, as the same guy who impregnated his mother? We don't believe that it's the same person. Kokiani Mizanu Vasli. We don't assume that we've just got one guy who's getting everyone pregnant. Okay, I understand that. But how about, you're telling me that that's because we don't believe that this guy is going around from house to house impregnating women. Okay, but let's imagine a case where a guy is a regular guy, you know, he's got 10 kids of his own, and he does a little extra work with some other women. I mean, so in that case, if this person is marrying, the shtuki is marrying into a case where the person that he's marrying is the daughter of a shtukit. So then that daughter of the shtukit, that shtukit was married to a regular guy. So Shema Yisa, Achoto Mi'aviv. So you're right. If you're talking about outside of a marital relationship, it's unreasonable that it's the same guy. But if we're talking about marrying someone who is a regular person, she was born from a regular family, a lot of kids in the family. So then why wouldn't it be just as reasonable that the guy who impregnated the mother of the shtuki, that he's also a person that has kids and so on? And so if that's the case, he could be the husband of the shtukit. And if he's the husband of the shtukit, then we don't have the argument, ah, oh, come on, the same guy's running around impregnating everyone. No, it's the same guy. And you don't have any reason to say no, because now you're just marrying his daughter from a normal marriage. Yeah, but still, I mean, Okanami, what are you going to say in that case? That it's just not reasonable. I mean, I understand that these kind of things could happen, but the Rabbanan don't make gezeiras on things that are lo shchicha. The whole situation of a shtuki is not really shchicha. One of the pshatim, but Rashi likes that pshat better. So nochinami lo shchicha. So then there should be no problem of Rava's gezeira. Why should we make a gezeira? You might bump into your sister from the same guy. So that can't be the real explanation. So what is the real explanation? Why did the Mishnah say that a shtuki is not allowed to marry a Yisraeli? Because it must be ma'ala asu biyuchasim, another gavi klal. That we have in general, the Rabbanan are very makbid on the inyan of Yichusim. And remember that Yichusim is part of the essence of being a Ben Yisrael. That was the Shiftei Kah, and that was the Sifrei Yichuseyem that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says should be brought to him when the Goyim complained that they weren't given the Torah. And that's the whole Milchama with Pinchas. And I mean, this is central to the identity of the Mitzrim laughing at us, and we think that we're really children of Jews. You know, certainly the Mitzrim were impregnating all these slaves. They could do whatever they want. That's why we needed the Shiftei Kah. So this is something that the Rabbanan are not going to make it easy So, well, you know, it's Mistaber, and therefore we're not going to be Geyser. And so, no, that's not the point. The point is that we want to put up there very, very difficult standards that you need to meet in order to be considered to be Miyuchas LeYisrael. Now, one of the big questions from here, and this is like a major, major sugya. We have a limit over here that a mamzer vadai is osur, a mamzer suffik is mutter. And we needed to have this special limud, the comparison of the Kal Hashem to the idea of mamzer. Okay, question whether that is everybody's maskim that that's the limud, or whether it's from an extra word mamzer, but whatever the point is, why in the world, according to the Rambam, why would we need such a pasuk? There is, in general, a very universal machlokas. How do we understand the din that a suffik d'oraisa is l'chumra? According to the Rambam, the din that a suffik d'oraisa is l'chumra is only a d'rabbana. In which case, wherever the Torah says that something is usher, it only is usher if you know it's usher. It's the rabbanan who were the ones who said that will be machmir to make it usher, even though you don't know it's usher, right? So then according to the Rambam, how do you understand this whole Gemara? Why is the Gemara looking to find a pasuk to tell me mamzer vadai? That has nothing to do with mamzer vadai. Of course it's mamzer vadai, just like any other distinction and definition in the Torah is in terms of vadaut. So this is one of the exciting sugyas that everybody has like a different approach to. Many learn that this gufa is the mocker of the Rambam, and that the Gemara is not darshaning it from an extra word. It's saying the Torah said mamzer, so mamzer means mamzer vadai, and so on. By the way, there's a beautiful diuk from Rav Avadia Yosef, who points out that according to the Rambam, it would mean that the same thing should be true in the opposite. When the Torah says that, let's say, vasulam tzitzit, or take an esr gerulah, so over there, you will not be able to be mekel because it means it has to be a vadai. That maybe would answer even cases where the rabbana wanted to be mekel. Okay, anyway, as you can see, this is a very delicious kind of sugya, and it might even have something to do with pelting people with a srogim, but we'll go back to our Gemara. I just want to point out how this is very nagia, an overall question. Well, my Rava, now another thing, after talking about the shtuki, Rava says you should know that the same thing is true about an asufi. Even though an asufi, we have no idea who the mother or the father is, the halacha is that such an asufi would midiraisa be considered to be kosher to marry Yisrael. Why? Because let's think about what happened over here. Somebody puts a baby in a basket and leaves it somewhere, right? Now, if the mother was a married woman, why would she do that? I mean, nobody's going to know that this is a bastard child. There's nothing suspicious about it. I mean, basically, people will assume that her husband got her pregnant. So why would she throw her baby into a basket and throw it out? That doesn't make sense. So if she's an Eishes Ish, she would have said, my husband got me pregnant. B'bala tola. So what's your problem? Problem is, look, there are some cases where the mother would have been married but would never have gone to the chuppah. So in that case, she can't be told. She's going to say, I've been sleeping with my fiancé. She's not going to say that either, right? So that there's not such a simple solution. So she wants to get rid of the baby. Or there's other cases where maybe she is married, but her husband's been in jail. Her husband's been overseas. Now what's she going to say? She's got nothing to say. Okay, but that is a miut, right? So since we have plenty of cases of penuya, which is a general case, a girl was fooling around and she got pregnant. Now she's trying to hide the fact that she got pregnant. I mean, this was the norm, that you try to get rid of the baby. You go somewhere else, have the baby, or you actually abandon the baby, right? Now, those babies are not mamzerim. They're just bastards. So there would be no problem in terms of the halacha. And there's even an additional reason for people to abandon babies, which is that they can't afford to feed them. So we have cases of ikanami machmatra avon. So we've got cases where a woman will abandon a child because she's hoping that someone will pick up the baby, or the social services will pick up the baby and take care of the baby, where she cannot afford to feed the baby. Okay, whatever it is. But put it all together. So what have you got? You've got basically, certainly not more than mechza al mechza, right? That this is not a mamzer. So it's most probably, or at least 50-50, from one of these cases where people will abandon a baby for reasons that have nothing to do with mamzerus. They'll abandon the baby because of economics. They'll abandon the baby because of social stigma of having children out of wedlock. But that's not a reason to aser the baby. Therefore, the truth is that even if you're choshesh ha-Torah, amar lo yavo mamzer b'kal Hashem, mamzer v'aday lo yavo b'kal Hashem. And as we said, b'kal v'aday ud lo yavo, or b'kal safek mutar. So therefore, we really do not have a problem. So why does the Mishnah say that it's aser, says Rava? So here too, Rava gave his same reasoning. Matam amru asufi pasul, shema yisach otomi aviv. Look, we're very worried about the fact that this guy, we're not worried about the fact that he might marry his sister, even mi'imai, because basically we're going to know who the mother of the kala is that he marries. And if it's just a regular woman that has a cheskes kashrus and so on, it's very unlikely that she had a baby that she abandoned. But on the other hand, the men, they go around making trouble. And he may have this, a tendency to pick up women, even though this was his mother. And he wouldn't know that that person also got another woman pregnant, or maybe the same one with his sister. Who knows? But says the Gemara, but then if that's true, why is it mutter for an Asufi to marry an Asufit? It's exactly the same problem, isn't it? Shema Yisa Achoto, Bein Mi Aviv, Ubein Mi Imo. I mean, you don't know who the father is, you don't know who the mother is, and yet the Mishnah says an Asufi is allowed to marry an Asufit. Well, okay, I mean, the answer to that is that it's very unreasonable. That what? That these women, they keep having these bastards, and they keep throwing them out on the stairs of the church. I mean, usually, if somebody goes through the trauma of such a thing, you know, it doesn't happen again. You're not going to say that anytime we find a baby, that it's going to be from the same woman. And we already said before, it's not reasonable to say that it's one guy that's getting all these women pregnant. Okay, so let me ask you, then why isn't a Sufi allowed to marry the daughter of an Asufi? I mean, over there, you don't have the answer that you said about why think that the father was going around getting people pregnant. So it must be that the relationships of Asufim is just very not Shriya. And the Rabbanan don't make such gezeras. So then why would they have said that an Asufi is usher to marry to a regular person? It's such a rare situation. Who ever heard of babies being left on the steps of the shul by the rabbi's study, you know? So the Rabbanan wouldn't have been geyser. So it must be like we said before, mala subi yuchasim, and that's all. That's higher standards. Omar Rava Baravuna, there's also cases where an Asufi doesn't even have the din of an Asufi and is considered to be a kosher Yisrael. So for instance, you find a baby in a basket, and this baby has a bris milah. Now, why would anybody who actually is just abandoning a baby and doesn't care about him, meaning because he's a mamzer, I mean, they wouldn't have made a bris milah and so on. So it's clear that it's not a Sufi. It must be that there was some other basis for putting him on the stairs of the shul. Apparently, they couldn't afford to take care of him. What about if he was found mishalte adamei? What about if they used to, I mean, it happens sometimes today also, but there used to be this belief that when the infants, you know, would move their hands in these crazy ways that infants do, that they needed some medical help, you know, so they would swaddle them. But then there are cases where they really looked like, you know, their bones were bent out of shape. Okay, so then they would put them in some kind of brace. So that's called mishalte hadame, that his hadom, his own body was like straightened up. Well, if they did that kind of thing and they went to a doctor to make sure that he's okay, he's obviously not someone that they just wanted to abandon to die. They cared about him, put him here because they couldn't afford to take care of him. Or for instance, suppose the abandoned child is found Shayef Mishka. He's been covered with baby oil and he's got these very expensive Huggy diapers on him. I mean, who would have invested in a child that they're intent to throw down the toilet? I mean, obviously, there's a reason why they abandoned him. Or suppose they find him Malekuchla. So they had put in kol into around his eyes. Or Rami Chumre, where they had tied, they used to, you know, tie these either aksav, you know, with various shemus in it, which is the next piece, or they would tie these various types of herbs that were considered to ward off, you know, there's the vampires. Maybe you find him with garlic around his neck, whatever the situation is, right? Every generation's got its own craziness. Or Tole Pitkar had some kind of magical amulet there, you know, or Tole Kima. This is also, a kemia is also an amulet, but it's made out of various ingredients of different herbs. None of these cases make sense that they just wanted him to drop dead. And obviously, there's economic reasons. So, ein bo mishum asufi. If you find him hanging in a basket and he's on a deca, rock-a-bye baby on the treetops. Now the question is, imati lechaya, yesh bo mishum asufi. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock. And what happens when the cradle rocks? A local bear comes along and eats baby. Well, that's not taking very good care of the baby. So then, if it's in a place where it could be attacked by a chaya, so then obviously that's an asufi because they didn't take any precautions to see that the child should survive. Makes it very suspicious. But imlav, if it was protected, so they'd obviously brought a ladder here and it tied it up in such a way that an animal can't get to it. So then they were trying to protect it. So then, ein bo mishum asufi. How about if it's on a zardasa tree? Remember, we had the whole sugya in Psachim, a zardasa. Oh my God, that tree is filled with shadim, 60 different shadim. And oh, that if it's, oh, but only when it's near the city, right? So if they left it on that kind of tree, nobody in his right mind in those days would leave a baby on a zardasa that they expected to survive. Yesh bo mishum asufi. But if it's not near the city, so then it's not considered to be a zardasa smicha lamata. Okay. How about if it was found in a beta knesset? So beknishta smicha lamata v'shrichi beirabim. Obviously, if it's in a shul, remember in those days, the shul used to be like right out of town, you know, or further. So if it's close to town and people go there every day, so then obviously it's not a place that is dangerous and they assume that somebody would take the baby and would care for it. So they're an ein bo mishum asufi. But if it's far away from town or people don't usually come there, it's one of these places have a minyan only on Shabbat, so then it is considered to be an asufi because it's dangerous to leave the baby there. Omram Amar, also, if you have a pair of the sufli, remember we were talking about an erevin, we talked a lot about that, where they had these ditches. The question was, what's the din legabe, the hilchos erevin? If you have a ditch, they used to throw in the pits of dates and everybody would dump whatever, you know, remember, they had tons of dates there in Bogel. So they would keep the dates dry out because they used to use it for animal feed. So those kind of pits were just like basically abandoned. I mean, and they would, people believed that Shadim hung out there, so they would never leave a baby there. Let's say they find him in a river. So this is one of the Moshe Rabbeinu kinds of things. But it's not in the Suf. It's in a running river. So then it depends where it is found. So if it's in the Harif to the Nahara, so if they took the trouble of taking a little boat and putting the child in a waterproof thing that was in the middle of the main passage where all the boats go past and would see it, so then it's not considered to be an asufi. But suppose they just left a basket floating on the edge of a stream where no boats would go there. It's in Pishrei, it's in snowmelt. And that's the place where, I mean, just, you know, there's a little bit of extra water there, but not enough for boats to go in. So over there, they thought that the child is going to be gone. How about if it was put on a sidewalk? Let's see the Rishus Arabi. Okay, over there, in Bo Mishum Asufi. But if it's in the middle of the street, and over there somebody's going to run over the basket and so on, if it's in Rishus HaRabim, then yesh bo mishu masufi. Omar Rava, all of this is true, but at a time where it's shnei re'avon, in which people don't have food, then you can always assume that it's not an asufi, because the economics make it clear why the child was abandoned. Well, wait a minute. Rav is talking about the cases that we just said. I mean, what are you saying? That if it was shnei re'avon, so then if you find a baby in the middle of a highway, so then that's okay because they put it there for economic reasons to get run over by a truck? That doesn't make any sense. What's Rav referring to? Or the Rabbi, which case does it refer to? The case we just talked about? Leaving a baby in a basket in the middle of a highway. That doesn't make any sense. Elema or Shusarabi? So what, just because is a time of hunger, so the mother wants to kill the baby? I did the Shneira Avon Katalele. I mean, she's hoping that someone's going to pick him up. So why would she leave him in the highway? Ella what? So Rav is talking about that the baby was left on the sidewalk. Then that doesn't make sense, because then even if we're not a Shneira Avon, didn't we just say, my Irish Shneira Avon, we just said that wherever the baby is left on the side of the street in a place that's safe and people will find it, that it's not considered to be a Sufi. So what Rava says makes no sense at all. Where did it apply? Ella, Kiyitma de Rava. Rava wasn't talking about the cases we just had. Rava was going on the case that Rav Yehuda mentioned, and he said it b'shem Rav Abba, and he had quoted it from Rav Yehuda bar Zavdi Omar Rav, that calls man shabashuk, as long as you find this baby in the street, and somebody comes up and says, no, this is our baby. We left it there. We were hoping the right person would find it, but we want the baby back. So then Aviv v'imo ne'amanim elav. Over there, the fact that they came forward, either the mother or the father, if the child is still out there, so then it hasn't been defined as an asufi, because it wasn't mu'usaf. It hadn't been gathered in from the street. So then, aviv imo are ne'amanim. But the moment that the child is nesaf min hashuk, and then a few days later, somebody comes up and says, you know, this is our baby and we left it there, then they're not believed. Why is this? Because Amar Rava Hovi Yatzel of Shema Asufi, once he was actually collected, and then everybody hears so-and-so found a baby in the street or on the Beit HaKnesset door, whatever it is, so then it was already defined in people's minds that this child is an Asufi. You need Aiden to change a Chazaka. Once the shame is Yotze, it doesn't help for a woman to come forward or for a man to come forward. You would need two kosher Aiden to come forward. So there, Amar Rava, Ubishnei Ravon, that's what Rava was talking about. After Rava explained the Sfora of the Shita that we just had of Rav, that the Svara is because there was already Chazaka and Yotzel of Shem Asufi. So added Rava, that's where this Rava that we just said, we didn't know what he was talking about. This is what he was talking about. The Omar Rava, that in the event that it was B'Shnei Re'avon, so then Afal Pishin Esaf Min Hashuk Aviv V'Imo Ne'emanim. So in that case, there was a lot of problems. First of all, a lot of people had economic problems and would abandon children. And so they wanted to be mitaken, that there shouldn't be a din of asufi. And also, it's so mistaber that if the economic circumstances were disastrous like this, that they were waiting to see who it was that took it and whether the child was being cared for. And so therefore, it's very reasonable in that case to be Maimin of Ivi'imai, and everybody would wait before determining that the child is an Asufi, even though he was an Asaf, because it happened in those days so often. Omer of Chista, if you put together throughout Shas cases where people are believed, but they're only believed at the moment, and they're not believed afterwards, there's three cases like that. Shlosha Ne'amanim La'alter. Because they're just regular people, and the reason that we're believing them are because of the fact that they have a specific relationship, which is backed up by the moment that they spoke. So Elohe, Anasufi, which was the case we were talking about over here, we're calling it immediately, meaning so long as the child is still sitting there in the street. It doesn't literally mean immediately. And the other cases actually mean immediately. And that is a chaya. A chaya is a midwife or a nurse in a delivery room. And the woman who was taking responsibility for a blood stain where women were sleeping together in a bed. So here are the three cases. The Asufi case we just said, that we will believe mother or father only up until the point when the child is nasaf. We're calling that immediate. Doesn't really mean immediate, but obviously people don't walk by a baby sitting on the door of the Beit HaKnesset and tell it's, you know, not in my backyard. It is in your backyard. And therefore, that's one case where, for all intents and purposes, it's immediate. What's the case of the Chaya? The case of the Chaya is talking about where there were a number, either a number of births, which we'll see, or there were a number of births of the same mother. So there were twins, let's say. And the question is, which one is a Bechor? Let's say she had two sons. So our first case is Chaya Ne'emenet Lomar, Zeh Yatzah Rishon, Zeh Yatzah Sheni. So since she is the delivery nurse, so she can say, this is the baby that I delivered first, and therefore he gets the din of a Bechor, and this is the baby that I delivered afterwards, this twin. Now, the question, Bechlal, of why it would be that we believe this is not so partial. Because, I mean, even though some learn that it's a gezer derabbanan, there are many Utaina, how can the Rabbanan have no right to make this gezer? This is a whole D'oraisa issue, which one is the Bechor? And therefore, there's a fascinating svara, which is that in cases where there is no way for us to know what's going on, except under normal circumstances, a particular case, then it must be, if the Torah gave us a halacha that's relevant to such cases, that it's clear from the Torah that we have a right to know what's going on based on the normal way that we would know. That's an interesting svara of the Acharonim. And of course, it's very nogea in many cases, but over here we're saying that we will believe the midwife only so long as she was still there at the birth, because we do not believe that that midwife was able to so perfectly get the picture of which baby is which that she is going to know if she left and came back. So, this is only if she didn't leave the room and come back again. But if she left the room, then because why would we say that 10 minutes later she's going to be able to distinguish between twin boys? She's going to know which baby is which. If she's standing there, then she knows she put the baby down over here or down over there. This, of course, is the reason why we immediately put a little bracelet on an infant, so that we don't have these kind of problems of confusion. Rabbi Eliezer Amer, actually, No. Forget about leaving the room. It's only if she was absolutely in the same spot. So what's the difference? The difference is she turned away. So let's say she turned away to get a diaper. By the time she comes back, we can't trust her. That's the point. That's a big difference of saying she left the room. Okay, so that's my binaya. Ika binaya dora ab. And what's the third case that we said? That's the case of poteret chavrotea. What is that? That's the Mishnah that we had in Maseches Nida, where we have three women that are sleeping in one bed. Now, the Gemara at the end comes out explaining that these three women are sort of intertwined. It's not that each one has a place in the bed. You know, they were just sharing a mattress. They're all up against each other. And we find a bloodstain, nimtzat dam, tachat echad mehem. Halacha is kulam tameis. All of them are considered to be tameis because we have the chashash that this, they are nidas. Somebody definitely is a nida. But if one of them was bodekes and finds that she is a nida, so then he tameyava kulam taharot. But what does that mean? It means only if on the spot, Amr Chista, Shabbatka, Atzma, Kishi, or Veset. You remember the dinam anida, the kashir veset is a terminology that we use for a bedika that takes place immediately and not even to need to go and to bring a bedika cloth and so on. Tanarabba. Another thing about the midwife is multiple, where we have multiple women, and then you could easily get confused. So let's say you've got Mrs. Cohen, Mrs. Levy, Mrs. Natin, and Mrs. Mamzer, but she changed her name, obviously. So in that case, all of them have babies. And now, what prevents us from just having no idea who's the Cohen, who's the Levy, who's the Mamzer, and so on? So we have a right to trust the midwife. But when do we trust the nurse? That's only where there was not a legal challenge that was brought against it. Well, I mean, what's considered to be a challenge? What one person comes along and says, no, I was there, and this one is actually the mamzer, and the one she says is the Kohen is actually the lame, whatever. I thought, didn't we have many times, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, in Ar Pachot Mishnayim. We had this back in Gittin, remember? We're talking about what's considered to be Ar. That was a major issue in Gittin that we wanted to make certain, one of the dinim that we wanted to make certain about the Fanai Nechtav. Fanai Nechtav was to prevent Ar Haba. It was over there, the Rabbi Yochanan says, an Ar was somebody just makes a fuss. It's not considered to be an Ar. That's just Lashon Hara. So again, remember Tosfos Hashita over there was that even that Ar, we don't want to put a woman through, and that's why we made all of those takanas. But in order to have a legal Ar, you need to have two witnesses. So what would be the meaning over here? You're right. It would have to be an Ar tray. Two people say differently, then they can cancel what it is that the nurse said. Or you know what? Not necessarily. It could be that in terms of the belief of a nurse or a midwife, even an Ar-Khad is enough, because Rabbi Yochanan was talking about a particular case. He was talking about where there was a Cheskes Kasheres before. So we assume that this person is, let's say, a Kohen, or this person's daughter. And when somebody wants to bring an Ar against a Chazaka, so then you need an Ar trait. But over here, we haven't established the chazaka. So hecha deleka chazaka the kashas, even in our Arav Chad, is ne'eman. Now there's also one additional case, which is mentioned in that same brisa, and that is that if somebody was making a sale, and he is being, we'll see the case is, that there were two people who gave him money, and it isn't clear which one was zocha in the sale. So the owner is believed to say, I sold it to Mr. A and not to Mr. B, but only this is only so long as he is still holding the merchandise. So over there, okay, so Machlok is why that is. According to Rashi, he's Neman because he needs to be absolutely certain in order not to be over on Mishapura. According to Tosis, it's because it's biyado. But in any event, this should be another case. So, ein mikcho biyado, he's no longer believed. I don't understand. Well, why do we need anybody's belief? Why don't we just see who paid? I don't get it. You're saying if it's not biyado, we don't know who it belongs to. I mean, whoever paid it is holding it. I mean, it's his. Why in the world is there a problem? No. What happened over here is two people paid. He took money from two people. We saw him take money from two people. He claims that one of these people I wanted to sell to, and the other guy, he forced the money on me, but I had no intention of selling it to him. So Chad was Baal Korchi. Now, we have no way of knowing from the outside which one was the one that he really wanted to sell to Midas, and which one was being pushed. So lo yadiyahai midato, v'hai lo midato. We don't have any kinds of aidas that can talk to us about that. And therefore, we say that since both of them gave him money, and he no longer has any particular nemunas because he doesn't have what it is that he sold, so at that point, we cannot trust him, even if he says that, you know, I'm telling you, I have this in mind. It's very possible that at this point, he got confused. That was Rashi's approach because it's no longer important to him. It's out of his hands. Okay, so this is yet another case. We're going to see that there are, I don't want to keep you too long, but we're going to see tomorrow. You know, maybe we should just read it because it's very short. There's also another case where Dayan is Neman to say, "Lezeh zachiti v'lezeh chiyafti." So we have two people that were in court, and the judge can say, "This is the one who was Yotzei Zakai, this is one who wrote Zechayev, he owes him money," and so on. But when is this true? Only as long as they're still there in court. But if they're not there, so then it's possible that he no longer, and people get confused. I don't understand. I mean, the Besdin, when they paskined, they wrote out a ksav and gave it to the one. So why don't we see, Nirzi Zechuta, why don't we see the person who's got the ksav that says that you're Zakai? Manakit, why are we asking the judge Bichlal? But what happened over here is that whatever, they got into a fight that ended up between them, they tore it, now it's a shred, so we have no idea who is the one. Okay, so I understand. Do you believe in din or you don't believe in din? So let them go back into the courtroom and rejudge the case. I don't understand. I mean, if you believe this is a reality, so we can reestablish it. Why do we have to like sit there and worry about who's going to be Nehemiah? So Nehedav and the Daimino, why can't we go back and do it? Because it's talking about a case of Shuda de Dayane. And remember, Shuda de Dayane, we've had a machlokas every time that we talk about Shuda de Dayane. Shuda de Dayane means it's discretionary. So what's the meaning of discretionary? So remember that according to Rashi, discretionary means that the court uses its best judgment as to what it was that this person would have had intended, based on the level of relationship between them over the year. Which one did he, for instance, the guy leaves a gift, and the question is, was it the A or B? Okay, we can determine what's most likely based on all types of circumstantial evidence of what the person would have wanted. That's how Rashi always understands Shuda de Dayane. Tosis learns that Shuda de Dayane means it's totally discretionary, meaning that since the din cannot establish it, it's the best din, gives it to whoever they feel is more roi, not based on an analysis of the person's thoughts. This is one of the places where Tosfos asks on Rashi, so why can't we redo it? I mean, if discretionary means based on your best read of the situation, couldn't you have the best read of the situation again? And of course, Rashi says, when you're talking about subtle judgmental issues, then anything discretionary, by definition, is not guaranteed to come out the same way the next time it was the previous time. And since it was already awarded to one of the sides, you don't have a right now to rely on your judgment, because judgment is like very iffy. It's like right there, maybe it's right in the middle. And this time, you know, you felt the other way, so you would have no right to rejudge it. Okay, Rabosai, that concludes our Daf Ayin Gimel. And brings us to the time to learn Yerushalmi, and also brings us to a bracha of Yeshua Hashem Gehrev Ayin, and Yeshias Hamecha Uvarech Esnachal Asecha, or Eim Adam Olam.